Welcome to the milk bar. 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 Welcome to the milk bar.
Welcome along to episode 411 of the Milk Bar. Jason Forrest here with you this week as ever. And coming up on the show, we're talking bread. Joy Roxburgh joining me in the studio. We'll be hearing from her all about what's going on in the world of National Bread Week. And also we'll be finding out all about Northern Ballet's latest production. It's The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas. And it debuts at the Grand World Premiere for that particular piece of work. And we're talking to its choreographer. And as well as that, some music. We're looking back into the archive with a couple of tunes from Liam Payne and also a little bit of music from our friends at Bilston Operatic from when they produced Hairspray on stage. That's on the way on the show. But first of all, from Monday the 24th to Saturday the 29th of July, Funny Girl is at Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre. Somebody who is no stranger to the show, Darius Campbell, who joins me now on the phone. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Just backstage right now, and it's such a pleasure. After we opened it in London with Sheridan Smith, Natasha Barnes helped take over when Sheridan had a little break, and now they're starring as Fanny Bryce in the number one romantic musical comedy of all time, and I get to be the leading man. So pinch me, because I get to do it now 18 months on, and we're still performing to standing ovations every night. I feel very, very lucky.
An amazing musical. It made Barbra Streisand 50 years ago, and it's doing great things as part of this tour across the UK now. And at the Grand, Natasha J. Barnes due to join us as well. And alongside yourself, you know, you've got such experience in this musical. It's going to be an absolute treat for anyone who comes along and sees it.
We've got some of the best music scores and some of the best songs maybe the last 70 years. The show's 50 years old, and it hasn't been performed since the original Barbra Streisand version. Was set her into stardom, and they made a film with Omar Sharif, and it won 5 Academy Awards, and so it's seeped in history, and it has such a wonderful, joyful, whimsical, and I think that the female character is one that women really identify with in different ways. Different generations, younger girls, and women that have children and grandchildren, they relate to this Fanny Bryce character. She was a real ugly duckling to swan story, and she was someone that didn't entirely fit in. And I think that we can all relate to that feeling, particularly now at a time, you know, post-Brexit, at a time when people are rising up about our political choices, our president, our groups of individuals that don't necessarily identify with the larger choices that are being made politically. I think people right now feel a little out of sorts. And I think that they want to feel special, and they want to feel part of something bigger. And she, Fanny Bryce, definitely was one of those individuals. And she set her own path with someone that I think was a feminist icon and someone that really created a huge impact in her industry. She went from being rejected, which is something that we also identify when we see all of our reality TV shows nowadays seem to be based on the idea of pick me, whether it's Dancing with the Stars and Strictly Come Dancing, or whether it's X Factor and The Voice. We seem to have as an idea within entertainment that really is everywhere. And it wasn't something that we saw much, but it was something that she rose up against. The highest paid female performer in the world, $20,000 a week, which in today's money is silly money. And so she's someone definitely that we need to tip our hat to, and I respect hugely. And to be able to tell her story on stage is really special.
From the Brooklyn Music Hall beginnings to being that Broadway star, an amazing journey, and brought to life in an amazing musical. And, I mean, you've experienced a number of shows. You couldn't have possibly imagined that you would be playing roles like this when you first started out at what, the tender age of about 18, 19, first hitting our TV screens with some amazing performances back in the early part of the 2000s?
Absolutely. I mean, when I look back, I can't believe it was 17 years since I did the original audition, and 15 years since my song Colorblind went to number one. And it's been 2005 when I first took to the West End boards and played as Billy Flynn in Chicago. And I've been so lucky to have worked with my heroes, Sir Trevor Nunn, Sir Tim Rice, and taken the lead in musicals that I've loved being part of, and stories that are classic leading man romantic stories, from Gone with the Wind to Guys and Dolls to From Here to Eternity. So Funny Girl is one that really is the jewel in the crown of musicals, and is one that we seem to be so lucky to be entertaining audiences up and down the country with. To no dissipation of energy. I don't know how our leading ladies do it.
Absolutely. And I mean, and to go from the West End onto a tour, that must be, an amazing experience. And have you played Wolverhampton before, or is this your first time in the city?
I've played Wolverhampton before. It's a great theatre. I love the people with Wolverhampton. We've had, I remember, actually, groggily, a very hungover experience after having performed in Wolverhampton. I'm not sure if that will be something I'm reenacting this time, but I'm really looking forward to being there for the whole week.
Great to have you along. And all the roles that you play, whether it be as you're an ambassador for the Prince's Trust or whether you're on stage, you're singing your heart out, I know that you give this absolutely your all. And what drives you to those performances?
Really, for me, it's about being of service and trying to serve the role, trying to serve the people that I'm performing to by giving a great performance, service, and giving back. I try to bring everything that I'm doing back to the idea of service, because, you know, the ultimate failure in life is having success without fulfillment, whether it be material success, whether it be figurative, to be able to share that with our family, our community, later, the wider scope of people that we touch. And so service for me is kind of everything, and that's what I keep coming back to. So it's great to be of service.
On the stage now, probably no time to be thinking about writing songs, but is that something you keep going in the background for your own personal time?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no. I write songs and keep coming back to a love of literature and poetry, and I try and keep a multidisciplinary approach to everything that I do creatively. And writing is a dear love of mine, and one that I started with as a kid. I was writing at the age of 12, for my first love song at the age of 14, and totally got rejected by the girl I sang that to, and look back, I'm grateful for all the experiences that allow me to write songs. So, yeah, no, my next project music will be an album. So I've gone through two iterations of albums that never got released. Maybe we'll revisit some of those and there'll be entirely new songs. But recently I've been putting pen to paper again, and I'm excited to get back into the studio and do some more recording.
But not only do you write songs, there's obviously the written word in the form of books as well. And you've been on the Sunday Times bestseller list. Again, might we see a return to that top listing for you?
You know, I think that variety is the spice of life. Variety, I think, is really important whenever you're in the entertainment industry. It's a cutthroat industry, and it's not a very certain one. I really feel for the contestants that I see on reality shows like The Voice and X Factor, and you see them and their hopes come to fruition, and then within 6 months or a year, they're dropped and kicked to the side because the next TV show comes along and it's to have a new star, a new winner, and be done with the old one. So I feel for my colleagues and for the next generation, and I feel that that's why variety is important, so that you're not pigeonholed and you can keep giving back in different ways.
Well, certainly with what you've done, you could no way be pigeonholed, from opera through musicals, through pop, and everything else in between. Absolutely fantastic work. We're so looking forward to seeing you at the Grand Theatre. It's Funny Girl. It's Monday the 24th through to Saturday the 29th of July. It's alongside Natasha J. Barnes. It's going to be a great show. We have guaranteed that. The reviews that tell us you two work so well together. Tickets from thegrandtheatre.co.uk online or 01902 429212, which is the box office number. But for now, Darius Campbell, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you in the city of Wolverhampton very soon.
It's such a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. I look forward to seeing everyone that's listening to this podcast at the show. Come back to the stage door afterwards. It would be my pleasure to sign autographs and do photos.
There you go. There's going to be a queue now. You've already said it. So we look forward to seeing you round the block at the Grand. Darius, thanks again.
Thanks so much. Thanks again.
So let's take some music from Bilston Operatic. Popped in to see us when they were promoting their show, Hairspray, a couple of years ago. Let's take a listen to one of the songs from the show. This is You Can't Stop the Beat.
Shake it, shake it, shake it, but man, and so I'm gonna shake and shimmy at the back. best that I can today. You can't stop the motion of the ocean or the sun in the sky. You can wonder if you wanna, but I'll never ask why. You can try to hold me down, I'm gonna spit in your eye and say, you can't stop the beat. You can't stop the river as it rushes to the sea. You can try to stop the hands of time, but you know it just won't be. And if they try and stop the seaweed, I'll call the NAACP.
Ever since we first saw the light, I met a woman like you, shake it on a Saturday night. So I'm gonna shake and shimmy with all of my might today.
You can't stop the motion of the ocean all the way from above. You can try to stop the paradise we're dreaming of, but you can't stop the rhythm of two hearts in love to say. You can't stop the beat.
Wilson Operatic performing You Can't Stop the Beat from Hairspray. We'll have some other music in a short while's time as we go back in time to when Liam Payne dropped in to see us on episode 36.
Northern Ballet have The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas at Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre from Tuesday the 30th through to Wednesday the 31st of May. Daniel De Andrade is the choreographer and he joins me down the phone to tell me more about the show. Hello.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You've actually danced with the National Ballet in the past, and now you've moved into working with them as choreographer. But 1995 is when you joined as a principal artist.
That's right, and that's the Northern Ballet. I joined in 1995, still under the directorship of Christopher Gable, and danced with the company for about 10 years, actually, until David Nixon joined the company early 2000s, and have been with the company ever since.
So you know what it's like to be on stage to tell these stories through dance. And The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas is something that people may have seen the play and read the book and know that in itself it is a very moving piece. And I suppose that's how it became well-suited to the kind of work that you do at Northern Ballet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at Northern Ballet, we are constantly looking for new exciting titles to show our audiences through dance. And as soon as I read the book for The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, I just felt compelled, actually, to put this story into dance and give the chance for the audience to see on stage, you know, sort of a touching story of what is a very poignant subject.
When you come to try and tell a story in dance, obviously there are no words as such in this, I take it.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we pride ourselves in the ability to be able to tell through dance and in actual fact, enhance all the emotions of a story without any words. I think dance is a very good medium for that to happen because the dancers can really extend their movements and feel the portrayal of the role through dreams, which are actually only possible when the bodies are free to do the movements that they are able to do. So,
well, and having seen the work of Northern Ballet in the past, I know what an amazing array of dancers and skills that they have. But how does it start from the page and then turn into the final dance? What sort of process is it and how long does it take?
Well, I mean, I think understanding the story is the first thing, and then connecting emotionally with the story is obviously very important too from the perspective of the choreographer who's going to create it. I think from that point on, one just tries to select as many sections as possible from the book which are able to be expressed through movement, and that also can carry a lot of emotional content, so that you know that things can be done through strong moments and then it kind of pinpoints the journey of the book and how it unravels itself.
And when it comes to finding your Bruno and your Shmuel as they're divided by this barbed wire fence and to tell the tale of their unlikely friendship, again, you've got another character in effect in the fence and the separation of these two. And I suppose that's easier to use in dance than it would be necessarily in just a spoken word play.
Well, I mean, the fence is a strong statement, really, and I think it was envisaged that way by John Boyne himself in writing the book. I'm pretty sure, it divides the two boys, but it also divides the world into people who are perpetrating the most horrendous cruelties that humanity has ever seen, and on the other side, people who have to to endure that suffering. And the fence itself becomes a point in the story where we can imagine, even if we can't see it, we can imagine that division, we can imagine where these people are and what they are suffering. And I think that, the two boys are just the tip of the iceberg in terms of representing their own side of the story and where they are in their lives.
And obviously there's the rest of the cast involved in all this, because it surrounds the main two players, but they're not the only dancing feet and bodies that we'll see on stage, are they?
No, that's right. I mean, that was one of the reasons why I felt so inspired by The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas as a story, simply because there are so many very strong and discernible characters that can be developed into leading roles. So usually we have a ballet where we have two, three or four leading roles. In this case, even with a small cast, we have the chance to develop about 8 to 10 characters who are telling their own story and who have a very important point to put across.
Well, it is a heartbreaking story and told through dance for the first time. I say it must have been an amazing experience bringing this to the stage, and having been to your base in Leeds and seen all of the rehearsals and the fantastic space and the hard work that's put in by so many people, I know this is going to be an amazing production. And even then, with the costumes, again, that must have been another interesting place to visit and to make work. I mean, how did you actually look at putting the design together for the costumes, and who did you work with on that one?
The set design and the costume designs have been done by Mark Bailey, who I have worked with in the past and who is an incredibly careful and resourceful researcher. And obviously for this particular subject, we feel that it was and it is incredibly important for us to reference history very well and try to into a space of like basically 10 by 10 meters. The main elements that can bring that part of history to life and and make us connect with it appropriately. So Mark has done a fantastic job of painting that picture for us to inhabit.
Well, we look forward to seeing it on stage for its two performances, Tuesday the 30th of May and Wednesday the 31st, 7:30 p.m, 11:50 through to 28:50 tickets for both nights. And you can get those by going along to grandtheatre.co.uk or by calling the box office on 01902 429212. Daniel de Andrade, thank you for joining us and for the work that you've put into choreographing The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Time for another tune now, this time Liam Payne. He has got a song for us.
And this is Bodies, Robbie Williams.
Okay, take it away.
Sunshine, then showed me my lifeline. I was told it was all mine. Then I got laid on a ley line. What a day, one day, and your Jesus really died for me. Then Jesus really tried for me. Decay and entropy, I feel like it's in me. Wanna feed up the energy, love living like a deity. What a day, one day, and your Jesus really tried for me. Then Jesus really tried for me. Bodies in the boulder tree, bodies making chemistry, bodies in my family, bodies in the way of me, bodies in the cemetery, and that's the way it's gonna be. All we've ever wanted is to look good and naked, hope that someone could take it.
God save me, rejection from my reflection. I want perfection. Praying for the rapture, cause the stranger getting stranger, and everything's contagious. It's the modern middle ages, all day, every day, and your Jesus really died for me. But then Jesus really tried for me. Bodies in the laboratory, bodies making chemistry, bodies in my family, bodies in the way I need, bodies in the cemetery, and that's the way it's gonna be. All we've ever wanted is to look good and naked, that someone could take it. God save me, rejection from my reflection. I want perfection. Bodies in the poetry, bodies making chemistry, bodies in my family, bodies in the way I mean, bodies in the cemetery, bodies in the poetry, bodies making chemistry, bodies in my family, bodies in the way I mean, bodies in the cemetery, and that's the way it's gonna be. All we've ever wanted is to look good and naked, that someone could take it. God save me, rejection from my reflection. I want perfection. Jesus didn't die for you, but what are you on? Jesus didn't die for you, but what are you on? Jesus really died for you. What are you on? Jesus really died for you. What are you on? Jesus really died for you. What are you on? Oh Lord.
Excellent. Round of applause from everyone.
Woo!
And completely not phased with the fact your mother's one of your backing dancers there. Is it singing along too? I'm impressed. She likes the tune, I'm guessing.
Well, my mum sings around the supermarket, so you'll probably see her on a CCTV camera somewhere in Sainsbury's one day.
Doing what she does and the way she wants to do it. That's what counts. Liam, we will have more from you in a short while's time.
Okay, sure thing. Thanks very much.
Joining me now in the studio from Soho Flower, Jamaica, we have Joy Roxburgh. Hello.
Hello, Jason.
How are we doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Good stuff. And it is National Bread Week.
That's right.
So tell us a bit about how National Bread Week affects us, because we all go out for our daily sliced loaf, pretty much, and that's not the be-all and end-all of it, is it? Because I know there are some fantastic breads out there that I very much enjoy myself.
Right, yes. Well, the emphasis for Bread Week, it's been organised by the Real Bread Campaign. So the emphasis is on healthy bread that's made without, you know, unnecessary additives mm-hmm. and improvers. There's so many people who, you know, complain about bloating, and you know, I speak to so many people who say, oh, I don't eat bread anymore because it just doesn't work sit well with them. And so the emphasis is on getting people to bake their own bread at home so that, you know, you can control, you know, what goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really quite therapeutic. We're trying to get...
Well, the kneading of the bread in itself is a great stress reliever, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Who needs a plastic stress ball when you've actually got something you're going to eat later?
Right.
But the breads that we get in the shops, though, they fall into various categories. So you've got the prepackaged breads from your big bakers who send the stuff all over the country. And right. And that has changed over the years with the number of different things added to it. Now, admittedly, there's some great additives like the vitamin D and all that stuff that gets added to bread. But to keep it fresh, it's also got all sorts of other things which have their place, but it's not the product that you may be thinking about when you want something that's much more whole food rather than processed food. And then you get things like the off-the-shelf supermarkets, in-store bakery bread, and they have do have a much shorter set shelf life. They tend only to last for about 24, 36 hours before they start to spoil. But even then, it's a bread that is designed for the mass market. Then you get some weird artisan stuff that looks fantastic. And that is so much more fun. And we're going to talk a bit about sourdough a bit later on.
Right.
But it is about getting something which has got no additives, wholly wheat that is your basis of it, rather than thinking about its shelf life first. So it comes out the oven and to the plate, and there's nothing that tastes better than butter melted into bread that's still warm from the oven, is it?
That's right.
And it's that magic that you're trying to bring to life.
That is correct. I mean, one of the things, you know, the use of white flour in bread is one of the things that, why we have all those extra additives anyway in terms of the vitamins, because the natural vitamins and minerals have been stripped away when they take out, you know, the bran and the germ out of the flour. So something has to be added back, and that's all artificial. Mm. A basic loaf of artisan bread, proper artisan bread, has its organic flour. And especially if you use wholemeal or a high percentage of wholemeal, it has the natural goodness in there. And then when you talk about natural fermentation, there's a whole lot of magic and chemistry that happens in there that you just don't need the bread improvers, you know, to do that. You don't need the artificial improvers to add that taste, because it's there naturally.
Well, with the natural sugars that would appear in the likes of the husk and all the carbohydrate that's sitting there, the yeast has got something to eat, and then you have to take it out and put it back in otherwise, don't you? And that is what's happening. They're taking it out, as you say, and putting it back in. And even to fuel the yeast, the food's not there for the yeast to work.
That's it, yeah. So, I mean, everything was done, you know, the natural way before, you know, somebody had the grand idea to do commercial yeast,
it is the mass market, isn't it?
Mass market, yeah.
But there's still certainly a place, and more than that, there's the pleasure of these breads. And I mean, what sort of shelf life would you expect from some of these things? You're talking probably eating within 4 or 5 hours to get them at their absolutely best, I assume.
Are you talking about the commercial?
The artisan stuff.
It lasts, I would say, about a week. Yeah, if you're talking about sourdough, and because the process of how it is done, the acids in the fermentation naturally preserve the bread for you anyway. It will go hard after, you know, a few days, but you can do other things with it, you know, croutons, bread pudding. Somebody said to me the other day, this guy said to me, when I was a child, bread used to go dry. Now it just goes moldy and nasty, and I didn't even realize that. And I thought, yeah, that's true. Sourdough certainly just goes dry. It doesn't really. I've never had any that goes moldy. I eat it so fast anyway.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? It probably won't last long because you're going to be consuming it. Yeah. Right, we will talk more about both the sourdough and also the world of celiacs and the way in which obviously bread is both detrimental and potentially healthy within their world. So we'll talk a bit about that a little bit later on. I bet time we have some more music, and it's another step back in time to episode 36. Liam, you're going to sing another one for us whilst you're here?
I'll sing another one for you.
Okay, what are you going to do this time?
Is it Stars in Your Eyes? Stars,
that is the correct answer. Take it away, sir.
They'll be making sure you stay amused. They'll fill you up with drugs and booze. Maybe we'll make the evening news. And when you're tripping over your dreams, they'll keep you down by any means. By the end of the night, you'll be stifling the screams. But since you became a VR person, it's like your problems have worsened. Your paranoia cast aspersions on the truth, you know. But they'll just put you in the spotlight and hope that you'll do alright. Or maybe not. Now why do you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? Why do you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? Why do you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? Why do you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? stars in their eyes. Remember they said you'd show them all. Emphasize the rise but not the fall. And now you're playing a shopping mall. Your mom and dad, they can't believe what you appear to have achieved. While the rest of these users are just laughing in their sleeves. But since you became a VR person, it's like your problems have worsened. Your paranoia cast aspersions on the truth you know. And now the tabloids use your face to document your fall from grace. And then they'll tell you that that's just the way it goes. That's just the way it goes. Now why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? It's the same old story, but we just didn't realize. And it's a long way to come from the dog and duck karaoke machine and Saturday night's drunken dreams. Now why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? It's the same old story, but we just didn't realize. And it's a long way to come from the private bedroom dance routines and Saturday night's drunken dreams. Now why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? Why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? Why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? Why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? Stars in their eyes. Now why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? It's the same old story, but we just didn't realize. And it's a long way to come from the dog and duck karaoke machine and Saturday night's drunken dreams. Now why'd you wanna go and put stars in their eyes? But we just didn't realize. And it's a long way to come from the private bedroom dancing scenes and Saturday night's drunken dreams.
There we go, that was Liam Payne with Stars in Their Eyes, the Jack Johnson song. Drew Roxbury is still in the studio with me, and we are talking bread on National Bread Week. And we were talking a bit earlier on about how people tend to find themselves being quite bloated after they've eaten bread products, and that can sometimes be one of the symptoms of a celiac condition, that there's lots more that goes along with that. We're not necessarily going to talk about all the medical side of that at the moment, because neither is there a medical expert in
this. That's right, yeah.
But you have the experience, and there's been reports this week that, that the lack of gluten in some people's diets is causing a problem, and I don't really think we understand where gluten intolerance actually comes from, because it seems to be expanding.
That's right, and
that doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it, to start off with? Because you'd think if you're celiac, that's it, and you would pretty much find out quite quickly.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what I look at years ago, centuries ago, there wasn't that level of gluten intolerance. I'm sure we would have heard about it in history.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's, you know, a fairly modern phenomenon. So you have to ask what's happening.
Because people are finding it fairly early in life.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, okay, there were lots of things that people didn't get.
Yes.
Because they didn't live long enough because of all the other nasties that got them first. But it is something that's hitting people at quite an early age.
Children
and people in their 30s, 40s. And you would expect, even in history, that people are going to make it to at least 50, fingers crossed, most of the time, particularly back to Victorian days. And I'm sure the Victorians got through quite a lot of bread, didn't they?
They did eat a lot of bread and potatoes, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
And they, as far as I know, they were fine. They probably didn't have enough meat and protein.
Yeah.
But they got through a fair lot of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously wasn't made the way we make bread today.
No, it was all your local bakeries producing it with flour from the local mill. And you even go back to the days of people taking the flour along, grinding it, then taking it to the baker to have it baked.
That's right.
And then
get
your baker's dozen back to make sure you weren't being shortchanged when you bought your bread rolls.
Yeah, that's right.
Because who wants a dinner party with a bread roll short?
No.
Wouldn't be good, would it, at all? And so it's... Obviously, when you're looking at these artisan breads, have you experienced less of an issue as far as gluten intolerance goes for people? Or is the gluten likely to be higher in some of these products?
Well, when you have natural fermentation, because it's fermented for a longer period of time, the gluten is actually broken down in that process.
So is the yeast eating the gluten? Is that the carbohydrate the yeast is eating, or is it not the case?
I would just say it's breaking it down.
So it does get broken down,
It's broken down. I don't get too much into the science of it. All I know is that when I mix flour and water and put it there to ferment, I see magic happen. <you know?
laughs> let's keep it there. The chemistry and the biology can do it all for you.
That's right.
So when you're looking at what to put together and what goes into these loaves, I mean, you're working from past experience and choosing the best combinations of things to make these flavours really come through.
Yeah.
And sourdough is your thing.
That is right, yes.
And what got you into sourdough? Because for me, it's something that if I'm thinking, you know, well, that one's reduced in the supermarket, I'll try the sourdough because it's now, instead of being £2, it's £1. And because sourdough is such a resilient bread, as you've already said earlier on, you know you're going to enjoy it for that little while longer.
Well, I've always been interested in health and I love to eat. People don't really believe that.
Looking at you, you're so thin, I can barely believe it. No.
So, you know, I Joyce Myers once said that your body is like your house and if you don't look after it, you're going to have to leave. So I twigged pretty early that you have to, you know what you're putting into your mouth. And I really love bread.
Yep.
So I'm not even sure how I got into this whole thing about soaking, but I came across sourdough in my reading and obviously tried it and really loved it.
It's got a really lovely crunchy coating on it. I think that's because the crust for me is the best bit of the bread.
Yes.
And I think I said when we were talking about this the last night when we get on about getting you in, basically I will go at a loaf crust first. Then I'll eat the innards. And I'm terrible at my desk at work, but you know, I will get a tub of sandwich filler, and I will use the bread as a dip to eat it because I want the bread. The bread's more important to me than the filler normally.
Do you know, I've known people who actually throw away the inside bit of the bread and just eat the crust.
I can understand that because the crust is fantastic.
I eat everything.
I do get, as I go through the day. It's stage first, as I say, crust first, innards later. Yeah. And the innards. I'm terrible. Crisps or Pringles or stacks, something like that.
Yeah.
Get the bread in, put some stacks in it, squash it all together.
And just have a sandwich.
It just makes me really bad. But it is, you know, it is how we choose to do it. And there's lots of ways of eating bread, aren't there? So what is your favourite?
My favourite sandwiches.
Mm-hmm. You like a good sandwich?
I like a good sandwich, yes. Sometimes I just eat the bread by itself, you know.
See, that's it can be a meal. In the past, again, it would have been a meal on its own, probably, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So tell us a bit about what you're doing now that's with the local bakery.
Well, basically, I want to share, you know, what I've been doing for myself in my own kitchen, you know, with people in general. One of the great things about sourdough is that it has a lower glycemic index than regular bread.
So less sugar.
Is that the correct way
I think
to
it
say
is.
It? It doesn't spike your blood sugar as much.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's all to do with the long fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously tastier. I've heard people say as well that, they put on weight if they eat bread, so they can't eat bread.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that lower glycemic index.
That helps.
Yes.
It means you maybe have a little bit more and still have the same impact, which is the best bit, because we do like our bread.
And it should obviously be better for people, you know, who are diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically operate at Mount Shiloh House, Hickman Avenue, in Wolverhampton, and I have a commercial kitchen over there that, you know, the folks over there are letting me use. We've got the front room cafe there, so it all goes together. And basically that's where, you know, I'm operating from. So I basically do a basic loaf at the moment. I'm always trying different things anyway.
But National Bread Week's a great time to come along and try. But
yes.
It's going to be, there may be some interesting different fillings and flavours that go along with it in 1 week. And you're not guaranteed you're going to get it next week. But if people tell you they like it, then come back. Then, you know, there's a good chance you're going to do another batch for them.
Right. And then, you know what? We've got all sorts of different flowers around now. If you go into Sainsbury's and Waitrose, you'll see like what they call heritage or ancient grains. Mm-hmm. So you've got like Camut. Einkorn, spelt is probably a little bit more popular.
That is quite a lot of spelt, and even if I'm buying commercially produced loaves, I like the ones with the multi seed in there as well.
Right.
And again, that's giving you a bit extra flavour and probably more calories, but it's good fun. And again, they tend to have the higher original grain content in them, don't
they?
Less has been stripped out to be added back in.
Yeah, and when people use whole wheat to make bread. I think by law, the mills are not required to put, you know, the additives in it in terms
because
of
it's
the
there.
Niacin and all that, because it's not being stripped away. So.
Well, the niacin, that's effectively, it's an emulsifier, I think, isn't it, that one? So,
I'm not even sure what it is.
Some magic chemical.
Yeah.
But it's not as natural. But they say that the bread has it before the wheat. Otherwise, no one would have discovered how to make bread, would they?
Right.
If you look at it that way, it wouldn't become a commercial thing if it hadn't already have worked in the first place.
Yeah.
But somebody took these seeds that came off the top of the wheat plant and went, I know, that'd go great. Turned into a cob and dipped in me soup.
Yeah.
it's amazing how we got to that point, really.
Yeah.
But
I think the whole thing of sourdough was actually discovered accidentally. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody must have left water and flour mixed up somewhere, and then, you know, they saw it bubbling up after a few days. That's what the literature says anyway. Yeah. And you know,
you never know
history.
The rest of it, who cares, as long as it tastes good.
Yeah.
So you've actually got a Facebook page where you're helping to promote this as well. So that's Sour Flour Jamaica. Just search
that's
on Facebook
correct.
For that. You can find all your contact details on there. But the best thing to do is to turn up and buy some bread. So what's available and when?
At the moment, bread should be available on Wednesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. My phone number is on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So it's best to place, you know, an order so that I know exactly who I am actually baking for, because I don't want to bake lots of stuff and have it sitting around.
Yes, you don't want to waste it. You wanted to make sure it's fresh for when people are coming to see you. So you've got 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so you can basically plan for your weekend.
Exactly.
If you've got a dinner party and you want something a bit special, then this is going to be the way to put the rolls on the table. So that works. Can we give your phone number out?
That's right, you can do.
Okay, so that's 07440 379144. 07440 379144, and so it's on the website Sour Flour Jamaica on Facebook is what you're looking for, and people can get in touch, place an order, and try bread as it should be, and without all the extras, and in particular your sourdough, which I'm told is amazing. And you're going to bring me some samples at some point, aren't you?
I definitely am. And actually, tomorrow on Wednesday, we have an open day, so people are invited to come on along. We're doing some samples. Let them basically, you know, just try it, and you know, we take it from there.
So that's part of Bread Week. And what is the address? Where do they come to then?
It's Hickman Avenue, mm-hmm, in Wolverhampton, and the postcode is WV12BS. We're open at 9:30, and the open day runs from 9:30 to 5:30, so people are welcome to pop along.
So nip along tomorrow, go and try some bread, and you'll be back for more.
That's on Wednesday. It's tomorrow Wednesday.
Wednesday, yes. Say to that tomorrow. It's all confusing. But yeah, so nip along tomorrow. Yeah. I'm hoping you've got your yeast ready for tomorrow. Well, there we go. And make the most of a great open day as part of National Bread Week.
Great.
All sounds good to me. Once again, that website, Sour Flour Jamaica, is what you're looking for. Joy Roxburgh, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's your lot for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Back with episode 412 next week. We'll see you then. Ta-ra for now.
Goodbye from the milk bar. 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 Yeah. Goodbye from the milk bar. Yeah.